Hello, I'm James Chow. For all of my working life, I've been involved in television, mainly as a journalist reporting on stories mainly to do with people, the Asian tsunami, the emergence of SARS, the AIDS epidemic particularly, and then of course all the other political stories, a lot of interviews with people that you will know and people who have shaped and influenced the world in which we live. I was born in London. I grew up there as well. My parents are from Hong Kong, my father, and my mother has a background in Indonesia, Malaysia, and Singapore. In many ways, I'm a product of colonialism, mainly British, a little bit Dutch, of course. And I think that's also shaped the way that I think today and what hopefully I bring into the discussion, but also in the action around global health. Apart from television, and through that work in television, I've been blessed to come into touch with people through health. For many years, I've been a UNAIDS National Goodwill Ambassador for China, and in 2016, I was first appointed the WHO Goodwill Ambassador for SDGs and health. I think the beauty of the tragedy of AIDS has been the learning lessons it's given us. Before, of course, as people like Peter Piot say, nobody would touch AIDS with a barge pole, let alone the men in the grey suits who would speak at the United Nations. And now, of course, it's entirely different. Those political leaders you'll find wanting to join on the streets, the civil society activists, the people who were infected and affected by HIV in the earliest days, calling and demanding for a change, for a transformation. Of course, not all political leaders are like that, but I'm afraid to say that most of those political leaders are still men. When I think of gender, and if we were to go by the dictionary definition of it, I would think about the male and female, but of course, not only gender, but the issues around gender are far more colourful and beautiful than that. And when I think of gender in the context of global health, that's when I get worried. It's more than just about having women leaders in global health, making the decisions for women, for girls, but also for men and for boys. But I think it also has to do with the texturized argument that comes up within. I think that has to do with our whole attitude in how we approach health in the very first place. I think it demands of us to strip ourselves bare to the very foundations and then to restart building from there. Because as we know, gender is not about men and women, boys and girls. There's so many beautiful varieties of us that lie within. And therefore, when we talk about global health, I think it's only fair and only right that we should have a representative voice that delivers on those actions. As a journalist, but also as a Goodwill Ambassador, I'm often asked to moderate sessions or plenaries or conversations or panels at different events, big, small, medium, around the world. I love doing it. I love drawing out of people what I feel to be their best messages and also their heart. I often ask them, are they mothers and fathers? What would they want for their children? What are their dreams? Because I think everybody has the right to a dream. And everybody has the right to realize those dreams that they dream. For a while, I read somewhere that there were some moderators and some panelists who wouldn't moderate or speak on a panel if there wasn't at least a 50-50 representation on their panel of men and women. And so I thought maybe that's something I could imitate. But imitation, as you know, is not always the right route or the correct process. I think we should aspire to certain values rather than just copy what other people are doing. And the problem I have with that is this. whether we talk about too few women CEOs on the panel, or too few women in UN leadership positions, or too few women who are invited to speak at a particular conference here or there on this and that, that's not so much my problem. My first problem is, where are all those millions of girls who aren't in primary education? Where are all those women who have gone to Stanford and MIT to study engineering, but who have disappeared from the workforce because they chose to have families, they exercise that right, and they can't afford childcare, or in the societies or family structures in which they operate, or other contexts, that is not realistic or practical or hasn't been presented to them as an equal opportunity? So for me, of course, I'm shocked when I see that a particular event organizer hasn't at least made the effort to appear, to appeal. But at the same time, I think that we need to get down to our beginnings, as I said, to strip ourselves down to our foundations, to try and get those girls and those women into the education and employment force, to contribute in a way that we know they are able to, but are not always allowed to. But I had a very interesting conversation with a young boy recently. I think he's 7, maybe 8 years old. He's a Chinese boy who is studying in England. And I was talking to him about gender equality and talking about women and girls. And he interrupted me and he said, "What happened to the men and boys? What about people like me?" And of course, it reminds me again, although we know it, but we don't always remember it, that when we talk about gender and when we talk about gender equality, we have to talk about a level playing field. We are not talking about special privileges for one group or the other. We're talking about creating the best opportunity for everybody, an environment, a space that is conducive to bringing out the best in you, an environment and a space that can only encourage and nurture, protect and propel. I love that word propel, because immediately in my head, I see a visual upward trajectory. And so it's not about pushing anybody down, but in fact, pushing all of us up. When we push women and girls up, we are also pushing up men and boys. And I think, how beautiful would it be that as one holistic 360 degree approach, we can achieve that in reality. We say this about AIDS. We say this now also about global health 50-50. I hope one day there won't be a need to have a movement such as this. And I hope it does become that. I hope it doesn't become another organization, another committee, another task force with reports and documents. And I know that it won't, or at least I know for sure that it has the best chance of not being that, because of the people who are leading what I know will not be an organization, but will be a people movement. And when I think of a movement, and when I think of equality, and when I think of other loaded terms like empowerment, discrimination, stigma, I go back to the beginnings of equality. The beginnings not so long ago in 1981, when the first cases of HIV and AIDS were identified in New York City and San Francisco, and when those brave men and women took to the streets in those cities, and then more cities, and then more cities after that, to demand not only that action be taken, and not only that they be recognized as human beings with dignity, but also, more simply, that their lives were worth recognizing, were worth transforming, were worth saving, are worth living. And equality also further back to the civil rights movement in the United States, that struggle for freedom, that struggle to exercise your rights as individuals. I say that because a bit of history is repeating itself today. And that is why I've not only accepted the very generous invitation to be one of the advisors to 50/50, but as a 50/50 myself, we live in a time now where there are major and uncomfortable shifts in our geopolitical landscape. And we live in a time when we're seeing a strong expansion in nationalism and in inward thinking. There can be no better time than now, and there can be no more urgent opportunity than now to create a 180 degree movement so that one day we turn around, and as we do, we take a little look back and we say, that was then, this is less so now. That's my hope. That is my dream.